like when I moved to England, I kind of felt like I was missing certain things about Barbados. I was missing, you know, you would walk down the street and somebody would say, good morning and how are you? And that sort of feeling, people seeing you and, you know, realizing like, no matter who you are, no matter where you live, that desire to be seen and acknowledged, I think lives in all of us. And so I came to the conclusion, like it will exist in every culture. And when you go somewhere else, start to look for the signs of those things. So when I moved to the UK, I realized people aren't going to say hi to you or good morning to you, but like somebody would always offer you a cup of tea when you come to the house. And it was almost like this welcoming gesture. And so I started to,
the rituals,
exactly.
So even it doesn't look like the way you want, like the way you used to, like get someone saying hello down the street, but actually a cup of tea, that's the same, they're saying the same thing. So just
saying the same thing. So it's like when you go to a different place, look for the rituals that represent what you want to feel.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Sophia Robinson, who is back for a second time on the Tour for Dish It podcast. I'm Angie S., the founder of AngieS.com. That's Angie-S.com. Link in the show notes. Where I'm a health coach helping busy women fed up of trendy wellness bullshit look and feel younger effortlessly without Botox. To work with me, you can get in touch via the website or email me directly at hello@Angie-S.com. So if you haven't yet, please share this podcast with your friends. Rate, review, subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or follow it on Spotify. For all the other platforms, whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. It takes 2 seconds and it's completely free for you to do. And it just really helps support me doing, like releasing free content week after week. So I'd really, really appreciate it if you do that. Do you want to press pause and do it now? Oh, is that me just being a bit too pushy and controlling? No? I think it's cute. Come on, do it. Do it now. Okay, I'll back off. So today with Sophia, we talk about what home is and what belonging somewhere means to us. We've both lived in different countries, and so we're coming at it from that angle. And Sophia is just wonderful, really calming, and just a really wonderful human being. And I'm really glad that she agreed to come back for a second time. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome back, Sophia.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
No, I'm same here. Like, really, thank you for joining me today. You were, just for if anyone doesn't know, like, you were one of the first guests I ever interviewed. So
long time ago.
Long time ago. You were part of like the brave women who took a chance on me because I have no podcast out. Yeah, you definitely hold like a special place for me. And so I'm glad we've kept in touch. And yeah. I wanted to do another episode together on home, what home means and the sense of belonging, because you've also lived in different countries. And, you know, so have I. I'm second generation of mixed background. So to me, it's been a lifelong question of where's home and how do I feel definitely. Belong somewhere.
Definitely, definitely. Same here. And it's one of my favorite almost topics to dig into in a way. I think I would have told you probably very early on, like I always thought the first book I wrote would be about home. And then I still haven't written it yet, but I'm working on it. So
it's in the making. Your book is in the making. Exciting.
Yeah. So I'm so excited to have this conversation.
Yeah. And so So I'm just really excited that it's a topic that you've obviously looked into and you're writing a book on it. And so can't wait to see where this conversation will take us.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, yeah. So before we dive into this, can I just quickly check, like, how have you been? Like, because you're based in Barbados. How has it been?
That's such a loaded question, okay? I told people a couple of months ago, like, I've stopped answering the question, how are you? Because... It's so loaded. I don't know what the answer is on any given day, but I did hear someone say the other day, like they're like a mix of being absolutely fine and like totally terrible. And I'm like, most days that's how I feel. So that's my go-to answer for now. I'm absolutely fine, but also not.
Yeah.
You know, some days you gotta just go with that.
Yeah, it's such a loaded question. And I can tell as well when I see people, it's like their face just says it all. It's like, oh, I don't know, what do I say?
I don't even know how to answer that question anymore.
I know. It's just like, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's all gone a bit mad. I mean, I hope we go back to some sort of normal. I can't be looking at shields in shops anymore, masks on transport. You know, the bars were open this weekend in the UK and no dancing was allowed.
Oh my goodness.
No dancing allowed. We all had to sit at the table. We all had to sit at tables. Wow. Obviously, I danced around the table at the table because I can't, if there's music on,
You're going to have to dance.
But I wasn't allowed to go, you know, away from the table to dance. So yeah, it's a funny time because it feels like at the beginning of this year, it felt like we'd all been drafted, but to stay home, you know, not to actually go to some like war, but to stay on the couch and like basically be grounded, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, it's been a funny one. So yeah. Can I ask, are you still celibate? Is that okay for me to ask or do I delete this?
You can ask. You're so funny, Angie. You're so hilarious. I'm happy to answer. And yes, for the moment I am. Let's go. For the moment I am. So yes. I feel like it's been such a long time since we talked.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
So when you say for now, does that mean that you're sort of like considering a change?
Not necessarily. For me, change would have to be brought about by the right person. So I'm not actively out there searching for anybody. And who is? You know,
yeah.
Everybody's locked down at home. So I don't think anybody, you know, I don't know. I would like to think nobody's out there actively searching for ways to break the break the lockdown. But yeah, no.
That's what online dating is for, isn't it?
Just get so to meet
yeah.
So for now I am still celibate. Okay. You just caught me off guard with that question. But that's okay. I
was curious because obviously it's been 2020, it's been a year. So, you know, I think maybe sometimes for some of us things change, you know. And I hear what you say, you know, with the right person. Because for someone like me who's not celibate, like, you know, even with the right person, it's not always easy. Like, you know, we all talk in different ways and communicate differently. And
yeah.
So, you know, ask what you want and get what you want. It's, you know, it's not easy. So
I still don't know when it comes to relationships, and I'm happy to admit it, even at my age, I'm still not 100% sure how asking for what you want. Like, I don't know. You know, I kind of sometimes tell couples and I'm like, how did that happen? Can you like just give me blow by blow? Because I just feel clueless about those things sometimes. But
I feel too. I think it's not easy because it can go from like everything's going well and then it can take a turn quite quickly sometimes when you're getting to know someone, when you're dating. And I mean, I date men, and I find that the communication style sometimes is very different for me as a woman to them as a man.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it can clash, and if you're a strong personality and both strong personalities, then it can really, you know, if one person is not reasonable, calm, it can really sort of like, you know, I guess like escalate quite easily. And then I'd be the one like, you know, leaving and what's it called? Slamming the door and go, I'm done. So I need someone who's very calm. But
part of the reason I asked how long it had been since we spoke, because I wrote a book, a fictional book, but it's on my website and it's called Lessons in Love, because I was like, you know, it's not fair that just because I'm not married or, you know, don't have all this big long history of relationships, I've learned a lot about love and I wanted to share those lessons. So I wrote this book. And I don't think I think that was since we had our conversation. And so, yeah, I had so much fun doing that and kind of just exploring the topic of dating and relationships, you know, especially from the point of view of somebody who doesn't necessarily have a lot of experience there. So it was, it's fun.
it's definitely a fine, like, you know, relationships is the most that fine line of like, you have to, it's like holding a mirror up at you. And at the same time, you need to make sure that you discern between that and then not letting someone, I guess, make you feel like you're always projecting, because obviously there is a fine line between your crap and then what someone else is trying to make it your crap
towards you. Exactly.
And it's a fine balance, because it's not like people are, even if that person is not being malicious, it can still happen that you do that. So yeah, it's sometimes it's like amazing, and then sometimes it's like you feel like you're like standing on this tight rope and you're like, make or break anytime.
I know exactly what you mean. So we'll see what happens between now and our next conversation. I'm sure I'll have another one at some point.
Yes. And so, can you actually, you know, I didn't ask you. Would you mind like introducing yourself? Like, what you do and where you live?
Sure. So I am, as Andrew said, my name is Sophia. I'm an author. I'm a blogger. I am a coach. That's something I wasn't doing when we last spoke. I've just started a little bit, probably this year, running some programs to coach people who want to write, whether it's a blog or a book or whatever. So I've been doing that. And yeah, but my main passion is still being an author and a story listener, because I love listening to other people's stories. So those are the main titles that I like the most.
Yeah, I may have to talk to you about this writing coaching, because I've actually been thinking of turning this into I've been thinking about a book, but I don't know yet. Ooh. It's not ready yet. Like,
okay. We'll talk, you know.
We'll talk. And so, okay, so and you live in Barbados, correct?
I certainly do, yes.
And so for the purpose of this, you know, this conversation we're going to have today, because we're going to talk about home and a sense of belonging and living in different countries and what it means. So can you just explain, you know, like for you, like your journey in terms of like where you grew up and where you then went on to live? And
sure. So a lot of people, even people who I've known, you know, most of my life, aren't aware. I wasn't born in Barbados. I was actually born in Curacao, which is a Dutch Caribbean island. So a lot of the islands in the Caribbean would have been colonies at one point of either England or Dutch, Holland, different countries. And these islands, Aruba, Bonaire, and Curacao, they were Dutch islands. And I was born in Curacao. My mom was actually born in Aruba, so that is the Dutch connection there. And I was born in Curacao. And then I lived in Canada for the first like 4 or 5 years of my life.
Okay.
And then I moved to Barbados. I was here until I was 18 or 19. I then moved to England to study. I worked there for a bit. I spent some time back here in between there. My dad passed away, so I moved back here for a bit just before he passed away. And I was here for a couple of years. Then I moved back to England. And I worked there for several years. I also lived in Tanzania.
Oh, wow.
And I was working there with a charity. Yes. And then back to England, and then I moved back to Barbados. So all over the place.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Because I knew you'd moved around, but I didn't realize it was that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. Okay. So you totally get the how basically the feeling, that sense of home. So you grew up in one place. I don't know. When you grew up in Barbados, obviously you moved there when you were five or six. But yeah. So when you were in Barbados, when you were there growing up, did you feel at home there when you were growing up there?
Yeah, I did actually. I've always felt like, to me, Barbados has always felt like home, even from when I was growing up. And I don't know if that's because obviously my dad, even though when we moved to Canada, he was working in Canada. He is from Barbados. He grew up here. Yeah. So, you know, when we moved here, my grandmother was here, my cousins, my sisters were born here. So it always felt like a home. It always felt like a home base or a home place for sure. And, you know, you and I were talking before we hit record, but like in the Caribbean, there's a very strong precedence for people moving out, moving to England, moving to America, moving to Canada. So every, you know, all of my friends have a family member, an aunt or an uncle or even a parent who would have been living out at one point, whether it's US or Canada or England. And that's normal. So it doesn't, I don't think it affects you feeling like this is your home when that is a part of the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I can imagine that because my friend, she lives in, when she moved to Barbados, her dad lives there, but she grew up in the US and then she lives in the UK and then she moved back there. Now she's going to move probably back to the UK. So it seems like to be very much like in, from what you just said, I thought maybe it was just mainly her, but from what you just said, it sounds like it's pretty like the norm that it's okay to do. You just go somewhere and then you come back. And so people are kind of used to that international feel a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a lot of migration in, like I said, in like the 60s, 70s, that sort of my parents' generation, there was a lot of migration then to different places. So, you know, it's just like even growing up, I just assumed that I would live somewhere else at some point.
So when you said there was a lot of migration, you mean like that people in Barbados migrated to like other places?
Yeah, to the US to England or to Canada. That's, you know, when my dad went, he was in Canada, had an uncle in Canada, got aunts in America, had an aunt in England. Like
that sounds exactly like my friend. She has family all over. I'm like, that is so handy. She actually goes and stays with them. Yeah, she's like, it's quite okay. Because you left quite young. So because I left at, because I grew up in Belgium and I left at 18 to, you know, which is around the same age as you when you left Barbados. Yes. I went to Denmark. And so I wondered, like, I guess, you know, from the experience you have, I'd be quite interested in hearing, you know, if it's similar or different, because how you felt when you then, you know, moved around and lived in different places, how you felt like your sense of home, because I'll just explain, I guess, like the reason why I'm asking this question. So to me so far, because I grew up, so I was born and bred in Belgium. And I guess like mentality was, it's probably more Belgian than anything else. But my mom is from Denmark. My dad is from Algeria. And so I guess like it was kind of always brought to my attention that, you know, I guess that, you know, oh yeah, no, she's a Danish one. Or she's, you know, like it was always like, so, you know, it was always kind of, there was always some sort of emphasis on it, not much, nothing that, you know, but I never really knew, like, I guess where it would, I didn't really think about it that much until I left and I went to Denmark and I went to a city where I had no family and no friends. I made that decision consciously. I thought, I'll stop. I'm a strong girl.
Another conversation.
Yeah. And that was like, that definitely was a big slap in the face. Like I learned a lot about myself. And then I guess from there on, moving around, living in different countries, this whole question about the sense of home and not knowing where I belonged, because after leaving Belgium, like what you and I were talking about before we hit record, was that I don't feel like I could really move back, because the mentality, even though Belgium is, you know, it's a small country, I guess, but I feel like when I go back, I feel like a tourist, actually. But even in the earlier years, because I then experienced a different culture, you know, I could see, I guess, almost like the bits of the culture I grew up in, maybe the bits that were maybe a little bit closed-minded. They're not closed-minded, but like, you know, how I felt, because I've experienced other things. And all of a sudden I realized I had to watch out a little bit what I said and how I acted, because they were not used to this new way that I'd got accustomed to. So I think it's like, so before we go into like a bit deeper into it, like, you know, did you have a sense of like questioning for you, like, what is home? Where do you belong?
Well, I did, but I think there's so many things that made that question complicated for me. not just moving to England when I was 18, but like, I think I started to ask that question even when I was growing up, because of my mom passed away when I was about 9. So we grew up with my dad. And so for me, it was even, I guess I even had questions around like how to, it's going to sound weird, but almost like how to be, how, like, what's the right to be moving through the world. So that kind of felt like it got amplified when I moved to England, because then I was in a whole different culture. And already feeling a bit like, I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to act, or I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to behave. Because for me, this was more a question, I guess, you know, as an adult now, I understand it was more a question of thinking about being a woman. Like, you don't have that female role model, you don't have that mother. Like, I already had questions like, am I behaving right? Am I doing this right? Am I living, you know, like all those questions were already going through my mind. So to add that into moving to another country was, it almost just amplified that feeling of just kind of sitting back and observing people so that I could get some cues as to how to be in this new place. And I think I eventually started to feel at home in the relationships that I made, in the friendships that I had, in the people that I met when I was at university. Mm-hmm. Because the weird thing about being a student is that everybody has that feeling, right? Most people have moved away from home for the first time, even if they're in the same country.
Yes.
Right? All of us have moved away from home, away from your parents, away from your routine, away from that comfortable, you know, like, you know who you're dealing with. You're now living in this artificial environment, which is a big building full of strangers. You know, like, being a student, I think, has that effect on you anyway. And so the good thing about being to England and as a student is that everybody felt that way. Everybody was trying to figure their way out. And so you didn't feel totally like, you could ask a stupid question and not have people be like, how could you ask that? Because everybody had questions, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of more of us have that feeling of, you know, I guess, like you said, like, you don't have to have, like, you know, crossed an ocean or the pond to feel new somewhere, you know, to feel like you're not at home anymore, because you may be in the same country, you know, theoretically, but each place, each town, each city has its own thing, its own quirk, and you will stand out, you know, if you're not from there, you know, because everyone knows who's there and who's not, and that's how it is. So, yeah, to some extent, for sure, I think more people would have felt that. And so you mentioned something quite important about the home almost became, if I understand you correctly, defined by the relationships you formed with new friends and things like that.
Yeah, because to me, when I think of home, like, and we didn't really define it to begin with, but when I started kind of like searching and, you know, kind of like looking more into the aspect of home, one of the biggest things that I was looking for was a definition. Like, how do people define home? And I realized for me, if I think of home, it's almost like this anchor, right? This thing that is stable in the midst of, especially for me having moved around so much, like, it's like looking for this anchor thing, this thing that is, when you come to it, you kind of feel like you can be yourself. And I found that eventually in the friends that I made, right? So I felt like when I was around them, I could be myself. So then it didn't matter where we were, because as students, and I don't know what other people's experience was as a student, but as a student, I was moving every single year. One year I was in one hall, another year I was in a different hall. House. So like even that wasn't stable and steady. Yes. Right. So for me, that stability and that anchor came from the friends that I made and the people around me.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of like, because I feel like sometimes when people ask, so where is home? I feel like that question is almost also asking me, where do I see myself settling and dying? You know, like, and I find that, I think It's interesting because I find that home for me is almost, I feel like it ought to be one place. I guess if I was to be very zen-like and like a monk going, oh, home is from within, is inside how you feel. And yeah, I guess sure. And I kind of get that, I understand that. But I think for me, relationships, people, my friendships, for example, they're very important to me. My friends are like family, because especially after moving around so much as well, friends become, it's a different anchor, you know? They're not an option, they're a necessity for me. And so, and at the same time, I feel like home is slightly fragmented, the feeling of home, because it's part of me, a lot of my memories, those emotional anchors, if I listen to a song, a French song, or a Danish song, they will make me feel, it'll take me back.
Nostalgic.
Yeah, they'll take me back and go, oh yeah, that's that feeling of when I was growing up. And my mom now, she's moved back to Denmark. That's where she's from. So she moved back there. And part of home is there as well. But it's not enough. It's not like a whole encompassing. And I wonder if it's because, obviously, I spent so much time as an adult in the UK. I've built these amazing friendships and over a long period of time. And I think so, but would I want to die here? It's almost like, where's home? It's like several questions in one. And I'm like, all I know is I don't want to die in London.
That's exactly.
Maybe in the countryside. Like, I just don't, but I feel like I miss like the sun. I miss like, there's also a sense of community when I go to Thailand, because I used to go to quite a bit. And it's like, because we see each other all the time, we do activities together all the time, we go to yoga, we do this. And and there's this sense of like togetherness that I miss from a big city. So as much as London, and I'm starting to feel British because I've been here for so long, I miss that sense of community. And I think if I have a place where there's a sense of community, I would feel more at home. And that doesn't often come in a big city, because now, when I first came here, all of my friends that I made, we all lived in the same area, because it'd be like, you meet someone, oh, where'd you live? Oh, yeah. And then you say, and we all agreed to live the same area, because we were like all renting rooms and it's cheap, you know, and we were just partying all the time. And, you know, there was not much importance of where we lived. It was more like we were closer. And I think now, obviously, when you befriend a lot of, you know, other people who aren't from the area, like a lot of expats or settlers or whatever, I guess expats, because settlers, you know, I guess I'm a settler because I'm still here, but people, they go back home to their home, like back to the original country. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, so
yeah,
I guess I've built more relationship with, like, I guess I have a mixture of like friends who are from other places and also people who are here, from here, whether they're like second or third generation, or actually just white British, you know. It's like, but it's almost like that I have to have that sense of continuity a little bit, you know, because people, they come and go, and it's like, whew, it's hard.
It is hard
when they're part of your home.
I'm curious, and this question just came to me because I have a really good friend who, she was born and raised in the US, but she currently lives in Italy. And I always remember her, and she'd moved around too. She lived in different places.
And she lives where now? You said in Italy?
She's in Italy now. And she said she remembers the first time she visited Italy, she was like, I want to live here. I don't know if you've ever gone anywhere and had that experience, because we talked about Thailand. So it made me wonder, like, you know, it just, when she said it, it got me thinking, like, I've heard some people say that they've left the place that they grew up and they went to a completely new place and they felt like, oh, this is my place.
Yeah.
And if you even believe in that, if you've ever experienced that, I'm just curious about that.
Do you know what? For a long time, I was like, oh, I want to live in Thailand. But then again, it was because of that community. But again, I don't know, would I? But the one thing that keeps me from living that far away is because, you know, my mom is in Europe. And, you know, I don't want to be that far if something happens, you know. I felt that sense of peace out there. that sense of community. But whether it is real is another thing, right? Because it's very easy to be, to have, because it is a holiday feel, right? It's like when you have like a holiday romance. So how would it feel? Would people, are people as real as you think they are when you know them for longer than a month or a couple of weeks or whatnot, right? So there is also, but I just love, I guess, I really just like the simple lifestyle, you know, and, you know, the community I was part of, we actually get to know the local people, the Thai people and stuff like that. Nice. We're not on the resorts and stuff. Like we live like, you know, it's, so it's really fun. It's really great. And it's really interesting, but I don't think it probably wouldn't, will it be home without those people I met there? No, it wouldn't be. So I don't know. I love this. I know what drew me to it was the sense of community. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was part of something. And that is something that's very dear to me. Yeah. I felt
That does make sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so I definitely built that sense of community through the friendships that I had. And I still have a lot of those friends today. Like the friends that I made when I was at university, they're still some of my good, good friends today, even though, you know, I'm here and there's one in London and there's one in Australia and there's, you know, they're one in Warwick, you know, they're all over. We're still really good friends. They come to visit me. I go to visit them. It's hard because I don't see them that often.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel like they're a part of what makes me feel safe. And I think that's a big part of feeling at home somewhere is feeling safe to be yourself, safe to be able to be yourself and not, you know, not worry about having to put on behavior.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because I would feel this sense of belonging here to London if it wasn't because we were all living, I say, so far away. London, it's not because London is, I mean, London is big, but it's not that big. You know, we're not out in the outback in Australia where it's like 3 hours drive before you see anyone, you know? Right. So, but I think I've noticed a change from when we all started to grow up a little bit and people started to move in an area they could afford to live in, but having more space.
People are buying houses.
Kids. Yeah, but you know, and it's like, so all of a sudden there's this space and I think that's the bit I'm not comfortable with. It's like that I struggle with because I am very good at spending time. I'm a bit of a lone wolf, but I need to be part of a community. Like it's such a luxury. This is what I've realized when, you know, living in youth hostels and just doing different things like that, that is, I find it is such a luxury to be able to say, oh, for goodness sake, I need some alone time now. Just leave me alone. Even when I felt that way, I knew it felt, I felt really lucky to be able to have that sentence in my head, to be able to be annoyed at seeing people too much is such a nice thing. And that's what I miss sometimes here. And weirdly enough, with the lockdown, the whole thing, although now things are opening up now, it, I actually felt less lonely.
It's so funny. You know, and that brings a whole other element to it, because I think this year of all years to be thinking about home when a lot of us have been sitting and staring at our four walls for so long, like it just brings a whole new dimension to that conversation.
It does.
And, you know, I don't know if I would say felt more or less lonely, but there were a lot of people that I connected to in different ways that I wouldn't have done outside of the lockdown. So, you know, one example is a friend of mine, it was her birthday.
Yeah.
And she had this Zoom birthday party and she lives like in Colorado. Yeah. So actually, if we hadn't been on lockdown, I would never, you know, she would have been her and her friends and that would have been it. And I would never have been able to attend and that would have been fine, but it was so nice to do that. I got to meet her friends. We played Cards Against Humanity. That was another experience. You know,
I don't know that game. What's that? Is that like an online card game?
Cards Against Humanity is, that was the first time I'd ever played it and I didn't know what it was either, but it's basically like, I feel like there must be a real life version, but we play the virtual version. Where they have these cards and you have to answer these questions and then somebody kind of guesses like who answered it or which was the worst and you give like this is the impression I got, like, they might ask you to finish a sentence and you could put anything there. You could put something risque, you could put something normal, you could put something, you know, and then they kind of have to guess like who said it or something like that. This is, you know, you're probably going to get a lot of people writing into you saying that woman doesn't know how to play Cards Against Humanity. And they're right. I lost. But it was fun because I wouldn't have normally, like, that was an experience I would never have gotten outside of the lockdown. And so I think there were a lot of things happened during the lockdown to mean that I didn't feel as lonely because I had those connections with people all over the world. You know, I have a friend who lives in Australia. She's a yoga therapist. And she kept saying to me, you need to come and attend one of my classes. But of course, she's in Australia. But now she's doing them online. So I actually got to attend one of her classes. So it's, you know, I got so many experiences that I might not otherwise have gotten thanks to the technology.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because it's like technology is sort of getting us closer, but further away at the same time.
Yes. I know. It's crazy. Yeah. It's just such a paradox because, you know, I'm trying to imagine what lockdown would have been like. You know, I always tell people when I first moved to England, this was in the 90s. Okay, there were no cell phones, there was no Google, there was no social media, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was, I don't know, you know, your kind of experience, but like for me, there were those big pay phones that you had to keep putting a pound in.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I remember, like, you had to ask authorization to make a long phone call to a friend because there was a charge to it. Yeah. I'm 41. I grew up, you know, it was landline. Mobile phones didn't exist. Yeah. Like, people who had, like, a phone in their car, that was the rich people. You know what I mean? It was like, that's the time era I lived in. It was like, oh, no, we don't have, like, you know, I was like, oh, you have a phone in your car? Oh, my God. I was like, we didn't have that, you know, but it's like.
I never even saw that. I'd never seen anybody with a phone in their car until I was into my 20s. You know, this was just like early blue screen email, you know, like and I'm trying to, you know, I was doing a bit of decluttering in one of my bedrooms the other day, and I found a whole bunch of letters that my friends and I wrote when we were at university. Like, this is how we communicated, right?
That's how we communicated, absolutely, when you got like a love letter from someone, it was like so excited. Now when you get like a text with like a heart emoji on it, and
that's, like, that's the extent of that, exactly.
But I'm a bit curious about those, because I haven't really actually taken part in like Zoom parties. I mean, I think the most I've done is having like a three-way call on Zoom with friends. And I think, it's like, I don't know how a Zoom party will work because you can't really be more than one person talking at a time on Zoom. So
you can't.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So if it's like, it's basically like a monologue or like a one man or one woman show each time. Right. Like, and then until someone else then takes over, like you can't take like separate discussion with someone if you want to connect with someone.
Yeah. So you can actually have breakout rooms in Zoom. So you can actually have little rooms that people can go and break out into, and like two or people are in one room, two people are in another, that type of thing. And so a lot of people, especially nowadays that they've had to do a lot of meeting facilitation on Zoom, there's been a lot more features that allow you to have those types of conversations. Okay. But that being said, you're right, it's not the same. But also, I guess I was comparing it to the fact that I was just sitting here at home. I'm not, you know, the day job that I have is not a work from home job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I literally was at home. Right? And, you know, I could write and I could read and I could watch TV. There were lots of things that I could do. But those, you know, that Zoom party or that Zoom connection to me, it was fine to give me more of a sense of being connected to those people.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely helped. I mean, for me, it helped to be able to connect with, like, you know, different group of friends over the lockdown, like on Zoom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, even for me, I can spend time alone. I've done it from quite, you know, my first experience of like not talking to someone for 4 days, I was like 16, and it was before internet, and I was just in a room. Mm-hmm. And that was really challenging, but I've been used to just, you know, spend time alone now. So, but even for me, I was just like, really white knuckling it after a while. I was like, I'm done. How long is this going to last for? You know?
Got difficult after a while. And I think, you know, like that was one of the things that you and I were discussing, like if your idea of home has changed with the lockdown. Mm-hmm. I would say, I can't say that mine has changed, except that it made me realize. So, you know, for me, I didn't see my sisters or my nephew that much. We did, you know, we did a few video calls and Zoom calls, and that was fun.
But that's the new home. It's going to be Zoom. Zoom is people's new home now.
No, but I don't live with them.
No, Zoom. I was like, Zoom, the software.
Yes.
That's the new home almost, maybe. I don't know.
I know. That's crazy though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to chat with them on video, and my nephew would make videos and send to me, and it was really nice. But I kind of miss that tangible, you know, actually mm-hmm. seeing them and spending time with them, that type of thing. So I think it kind of made me appreciate that even though I don't mind staying at home, and even though I don't mind the virtual connection, like I want real connection too.
Yes, 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 absolutely. I think that's one of my love languages. I've never done the test, but definitely quality time. And for me, quality time is not on phone, not on text, although obviously that all helps. Mm-hmm. But what really is the defining thing for me to actually replenish me is spending time with people in person.
Yeah, and I think like this experience to me, you know, you just talked about that. I feel like where that is helpful is because there are going to be points in time when you're not going to be quote unquote at home, you know, mm-hmm. like if you were to leave and go somewhere else. And it's kind of like understanding what makes you feel at home so that you can build those things into your routine, no matter wherever you go.
Yeah.
Right? So if you know, I want to spend quality time with people, like, you know, going forward, I know that I must build that into my routine. I don't want to take it for granted as soon as everything opens back up. Like, yeah, I'll see people when I see them, but I actually want to be intentional about having that time with people.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, do you think that some, because I'm wondering, because you were saying, you know, about the lockdown, if it changed anything about what home is, and I wonder if maybe some people, for them, they realize that, because I guess at one point we all had that window of, do we fly quote unquote home, like where family is, or do we mm-hmm. stay in the place we've moved to? Now, obviously, I know like for you, like you are in Barbados.
Yeah, I'm already
here. So you already are there. So, but I wonder if, because I feel like for me, it has kind of almost solidified a little bit, maybe how I feel about where I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to resist a little bit, you know, I guess being here. I mean, I've been here for 20 years, so it sounds weird, but I always had this attachment of, well, I am European, you know, I grew up in Europe, and that's just how I feel. I've always been in a very international environment. That's what I love. And I don't like to be defined in those kind of ways. But I feel like, I think in a way I've realized that I think something in me just surrendered a little bit to the fact that, well, I am here. I've clearly been here for a very long time. And you have to almost, I feel like maybe like I just had to like just grow up and own it and be like, well, you are here. What are you going to do about it now? You know, own up to it. Because this place has been actually very, very good to me. And it was actually the place that, this place and New York were the only two places, and obviously apart from Thailand, I can't really, it's a different type of place to be in. But in terms of like, London was the first place that I ever felt like I could, it was completely acceptable for me to be who I was completely.
That's important.
And that's important. Yeah. I felt really accepted and taken in. I didn't feel like I had to earn. I mean, it comes with time. You obviously, you earn the people's respect or the rights to be somewhere, but I felt like no one ever, if I ever had any comments about not being from here, it would usually, I mean, I've had them, but it's more, I feel like there was a lot more, I guess the matter of fact is that because I'm not, my looks are not part of the immigration that they used to. So I guess that is part of it too. But so no one really gave a shit, which was great. I was kind of invisible, which was very nice. It was like, it didn't really, so I have that, I guess I have that association a little bit with here, was like, you know, the extent of not being from here has not been such an emphasis compared to other places I've lived. So, so this has been a lot an easier for me to be here. Yeah. And I guess I really like the humor, and there's lots of things I really like about obviously England, but yeah, I feel like a part of me surrendered a bit more.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. No, it's good. Cause it's, I think I find that sometimes it has been a struggle to have that question in my head. Where is home? Where do I belong? Because for me, people are everything. That's how I belong. Yeah. But when you don't see them, it's difficult, right? When you don't see each other as much as you were in your 20s, because you were in your 20s, you had all that energy to go out and less bills to pay. those bloody bills. I don't really have an answer yet. I don't really know. It's more like, I feel like it's almost like an idea realization in progress.
Yeah, that you just kind of surrender that little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And I you know, for me, during the lockdown, I started keeping this COVID diary. I have not been great with it for the last few weeks, but I did it on a different website, not my blog. And one thing I talked about was that even as I felt, you know, very privileged to be connected with people with technology and whatever, I also remembered, and it's something I wrote about, like I also remember growing up in a house or a home that I wasn't necessarily that comfortable in. And it just made me think, like, you know, I'm lucky to be locked down in a place that I like. You know, there's so many people who are possibly locked down in situations that are not ideal, or that, you know, they're now having to face something that they might not have to face before because, you know, there are people in the house or situations, even, about the physical house itself, that they might have been at work all the time, so they never had to deal with it, or, you know, any of those things. And so it kind of just was a reminder to me, like, I'm still lucky and privileged to live somewhere that I enjoy. And, you know, it must have been so hard. I think lockdown must have been so hard on people who didn't. And that was something I was very aware of as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely felt on the winning team in the lockdown because I live alone. And so I didn't have to take on anyone else's pandemic stress or the way they deal with it. And because I'm a bit of alone now, I enjoy my own company. I really do. So I felt like, oh, this is great. I'm on the winning team. Single women are going to be the one who survived this. And also ex-prisoners, ex-felon, because they've had to, in their mind, and again, it's not to compare, but in their mind, they've had to choose how they have a sense of freedom in whilst all their rights of them have practically been taken away. They're just they're locked up, basically. Where we had to lock ourselves in, but they've had, so I think they've got all the mechanism to survive it way better than
I haven't. Now you have me thinking, like, this is, you know, this is somebody I need to interview for my book. Like, I need to find somebody who's had a period of that lockdown outside of the coronavirus.
Yeah, but yeah, because I think that their mindset is, I mean, because they have to somehow, I mean, I can't imagine something that must feel, I don't know how they feel because I haven't been in that position, but, you know, in that moment when you locked up the first few days, the first few nights, I mean, you know, we think that being asked to stay home has been tough, but imagine to, you know, and I'm not saying depending what, you know, obviously there are certain crimes that, you know, I would want someone to be locked up for. But let's say someone's innocent and they've been locked up. I mean, the exercise they've had to do in their mind to overcome that humiliation and that feel, you must feel so unsafe because you're at the mercy of the guards, you know. They have the keys to your door, you don't.
Yeah.
I think that all of these feelings, and then somehow finding a room in your mind to a space that no one else can take from you. And I sound like a romantic, yeah, as if like I've been there and I know. No. I don't know, this is in my head, but that must have created something. You have to have, your freedom's been taken away from you, but you have to create a sense of freedom for yourself and a sense of, this is your home now. You've got to make it work and you have to survive. And so, I think, and I don't know how we got into that conversation, but I think that it's definitely an area that I would love to speak to someone about.
I'll put it out there. Let's see who responds.
Yeah, let's see who responds.
That is such an interesting point, but I think it just kind of, you know, I think the whole lockdown thing has just done a number on some people's heads. Like, it certainly did a bit of a number on mine, not just being at home, but, you know, for some people, their whole sense of safety, because they may have lost their jobs, or their, you know, there's so many other things that feed into what causes us to feel safe and secure, not just the four walls around us. And so if you're in a position where you're locked down and, you know, you don't know what's happening with your job or your livelihood or your whole, almost like, I met someone whose career up until then was in events. And she was like, that whole career has gone away now. And it's just like, wow, it's just like a whole industry. It's mind blowing, a whole industry that's going to be completely changed by this.
It's completely insane.
So it's been doing a number on people's minds for sure. But it definitely got me thinking about, like, you know, for some people, being at home, as in being in their house, actually might not be the place where they feel at home in their own skin or feel safe or feel comfortable. And so it's still, as you say, a case of having the mindset of, like, how can you create that feeling of those feelings of belonging, those feelings of safety and no matter where you are, because you may be in a situation where you have to create that because it's not automatically provided for you.
Yeah, and actually you brought up like the sense of safety. Like, I think, because I think for me, that's always been a thing. Even when I was in the house, I didn't always feel safe in the house. So safety for me has always been a thing. But I think, so in this, where I am now, it took me a while to be able to fall asleep not feeling scared, you know, because I'm on the ground floor, you're always worried about the intruder. And I think it came back again during the lockdown when I could see, when I was worried about people's behavior. I was more worried about people than I was of the virus. I don't really care about the virus.
That is such an interesting point.
Yeah, compared to
you're more worried about people than you are about the virus.
Yeah, I was worried that people were gonna, because at some point it was really unsure how long it was gonna last for. I mean, we thought it was gonna be 2 weeks, and then 12 weeks later, we're still in this.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I was like, what if people uprise? You know, and start to lose it, and, you know, and people think they're not going to have food, and what if they start to, you know, break into people's home, and what if, like, you know, like things like the movies, like The Purge and that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, we've seen obviously like a pandemic play out. You know, we've seen that in the movies over and over again, and I'm like, okay, well, what's next? And I think, you know, all of a sudden I was like, I got really worried for a few nights now. So I found it really hard to sleep. And I've been, again, last week, I woke up in the middle of the night with this sense of unsafety, panic. And so, but that is because I live alone. Mind you guys, if I was in the house, I'd feel the same. But I think it's like, so that sense of safety, it's interesting you mentioned that with home. Because I mean, I feel my flat is in my little cocoon, but I feel exposed. Being a woman living alone, and my neighbor's son, I don't like how there's a vibe about him. I don't know. There's things like that. I just, you know, it's just that. And I think many women feel that way. I don't know how men feel. Men also, they can feel unsafe because they're usually the ones getting hit on, you know, they'll get into fights and stuff and getting mugged a lot more than women, I think. But so I don't know how it is for a man. As a woman, I think many, many women have, I think, unless I'm just the crazy one, I think.
No, you're not. You're definitely.
Yeah. And so I think definitely this whole pandemic thing is like lockdown and everything else that's happening in 2020 is definitely making us rethink a few things.
Definitely is.
Like, I wondered, like, because obviously you write about this and research about this in a much more constructive way than I do. I just sort of feel and think. I don't really have a structure. So I was wondering, like, you know, are there, like, what other sort of, would you have, like, if I could call them tips, I don't know, like three tips that you'd give someone to help them feel at home? What would you advise?
So tips, I don't know if I would call them tips. I will say when I started to realize it when I lived in England, and then I realized it again when I went to other places, just not just as a tourist, but even going to live when I lived in Tanzania, it started to make me think about people and almost all of us have very similar needs. Right. And it's our culture and it's our where we live and how we do life that causes us to express it differently. So I always, there's a post that I wrote ages ago and it was called A Cup of Tea. And it's about, like, when I moved to England, I kind of felt like I was missing certain things about Barbados. I was missing, you know, you would walk down the street and somebody would say, good morning and how are you? And that sort of feeling, people seeing you. And, you know, realizing, like, no matter who you are, no matter where you live, that desire to be seen and acknowledged, I think, lives in all of us. And so I came to the conclusion, like, it will exist in every culture. Mm-hmm. And when you go somewhere else, start to look for the signs of those things. So when I moved to the UK, I realized people aren't going to say hi to you or good morning to you, but like somebody would always offer you a cup of tea when you come to the house. And it was almost like this welcoming gesture. And so I started the rituals. Exactly.
So and even then, it doesn't look like the way you want, like the way you used to, like let someone saying hello down the street, but actually a cup of tea, that's the same, they're saying the same thing. So just
that's saying the same thing. So it's like when you go to a different place, look for the rituals that represent what you want to feel, right? When I went to Tanzania, they have a lot of greetings. So when you come to somebody's house, it's like, they have these things they say, which is basically like, you're welcome here, you know, welcome to you, welcome to our house, welcome to our family, all these different almost like greetings that they have. There are other places you might go where you might have to take off your shoes. And it's almost like, you know, this is a sacred space. And so you're looking for the rituals that are built into each culture that represent the thing that you want, which is to be seen, to be acknowledged, to be welcome. Those things will exist everywhere and you have to find how it looks because it may not look how you expect it to look.
Do you know what? This makes so much sense and I can't believe I never even thought about this.
Yeah. So to me, that's the biggest thing to think about if you go somewhere new. Like, remember that people are people. Everywhere you go, people are people. They all have their cultures and their customs. And it may not look how yours look, but it is there. And if you know what you're looking for, and then again, you will find it. And you'll be able to find some connection to people through their rituals, maybe not through your own ritual. So that's one thing I would say for sure. And the other thing I would say is to think about what anchors you, right? So for you, you said it might be like an in-person connection. For somebody else, it might be, you know, it might even be a particular bit of music. Like you could have a little playlist that you have. You know, you could have an actual thing, you know, a teddy bear or whatever, like a picture. There's something that you might actually be able to carry with you that could anchor you in a place where you feel.
But doesn't that make you feel nostalgic more than actually at home in your new place?
It can make you feel nostalgic, or it can be, it can give you clues to what makes you feel comfortable and what makes you relax. Because the thing is, when you first move to somewhere, you might find that you get a little bit stressed out. And so having that thing may just be able to calm you down. You may not need it after a while, but having that thing initially may just be something that makes you feel, okay, I can calm down, I can relax, I can, you know, if you moved into a shared house and you had a room, right? That room is your space. So you could decorate it in a way that just makes you feel like when I come into this room and I close this door, this is my place, this is my sanctuary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You find a way to create that if you're in a place that might not be the place that you're in.
Yeah, it's almost like putting like a flavor on your flavor onto something. Like sometimes it could even just be like this rug or this like blanket that is like, you know, it means something to you. And it's like, okay, well now this is home. I've started to do that because when I go away, I've gone on holidays by myself a lot. And when I go on holidays, I usually go by myself. I sound like that's such a sad loner over here. But anyway, but I always bring something to almost like, I didn't used to do this before, but I don't know why I picked this up. So I think someone told me about this, but I will bring something of mine. Like I have like a couple of sarongs that I really like. They're really bright colors. Yes. And I will put that on the bed or on the chair. And then I have very simple jewelry. Like it's all like done with wood or, you know, nothing is like gold or anything like that. It's just really, really cheap stuff. But I like them and I put them out almost like a little display on the table because it brings up my femininity. So it represents my femininity. So to not forget to just be more feminine. And then I have my sarongs at home and, you know, and I used to actually bring around like a little teddy bear I had like from like childhood. But yeah. So yeah, I see what you mean. It's like you have to put in your own stamp on it a little bit.
Yeah, you have to kind of bring your own flavor to it. And the last thing I would say is to think about, you know, going back to the very first thing I said, is like I believe that we can connect with all people, no matter, you know, maybe they may look different to you, sound different to you, they may even be speaking a different language.
Yeah,
but so much of communication is nonverbal. Like 80% of communication is nonverbal, right?
Yes.
So I think you know, sometimes you might go somewhere, and I don't know how you feel about this because I don't know if English is your first language, but like for me, when I went to Tanzania, that was a big thing for me because I did not speak the language, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like you feel like that's a barrier to you being able to connect with people.
Yeah.
But if you remember that. Like I said, I always remember like 80% of communication is nonverbal.
I think actually often like problems can be arises with words.
That
happen. And sometimes that's how you also resolve things. But no, English is not my first language, actually my fourth. But like now it's sort of become my first now because I've been here for so long, right?
Yeah.
I'm always talking English. But when I first came, even little things like I just didn't get it that, sometimes I didn't understand that I was being rude to people.
Yes.
I really did not know. I thought, well, I was just being myself. And I didn't realize. And also at times I thought that people were more my friends than they really were. So for example, I remember I had a Welsh boyfriend and I remember we went to Wales and visited his parents. And his mom kept saying, oh, my love, darling, you know, I can't remember what the word she said. It was like, I was not accustomed to this. So like, you know, she'll say, darling, sweetheart, you know, it's a very, I mean, they were Welsh, but it's a very English language thing in the UK, I feel, anyway.
Yes, those terms of endearment.
Terms of endearment, which is actually inappropriate in the cultures I'm from, unless you're like close to people. You don't say that, you know, for example, yeah. So I was like, oh my God, I'm definitely in, like, they love me. After that, he actually dumped me.
So
I was so not in. But yeah, I mean, they like me, but I thought that was like so sometimes you can almost confuse that as like an overly, an affection that's not there. So now I've sort of, now obviously I understand this now. And it kind of makes, I giggle inside when, and my mom, she's lived in the UK before I was born. She was a au pair here. And so, when I go to the market with her and you have that really cockney accent, go, all right, darling, to my mom, it makes me laugh because that is so not done where we're from. But it's funny because I kind of, I quite like that side of it now. I think it's so sweet and it kind of almost bridge a gap that you're bridging a gap when I feel like when they do that. It's part of the cup of tea. is part of the greeting down the street. Is the that's how they bridge that gap and make you take you in a little bit more.
Yeah,
you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just seeing it for what it is, like
yeah,
see it for what it is, then I think you appreciate it so much more.
Yes. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So those would be, if I were to give any tips, it would be those.
I think they're great. I can't. First of all, I actually can't believe I didn't even think about that. And I don't know if this is, would this be different for you or not? But would you give the same tips, or would you give different tips to help someone felt like they belong to a place? Or I guess maybe home is belonging to a place.
I think belonging is a different feeling, mm-hmm. because I think that is less about, you know, finding the rhythm of the place. To me, like finding those rituals and everything helps you figure out the rhythm of the place that you're in. But I feel like belonging, to me, each person has to define what belonging is to them. A big part of belonging to me was the connections that I made with people. And so I definitely felt more of that when I made those friendships. And I think, and that was actually the third thing I was going to say, which is, find the things that you like to do. So if you're somebody who likes to go to church, like find a church that you feel comfortable in. If you're someone who likes to play a sport, you know, maybe you can find a sport to play or something. Like you're more likely to find those connections when you're doing something that brings out the best in you. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you know that, you know, going to the gym or going for a run makes you feel really good and it brings out the best side of you, you know, find somewhere to do that and you'll find those connections there. And I think that will definitely increase your sense of belonging. If you feel like you are being accepted by people, and I, you know, like I said to you, I think even before we hit record earlier, for me, that biggest friendship group, the best connections and the best relationships I made were with other people who had also lived in other places. Mm-hmm. So even though they, you know, quite a few of them actually were and are British, they had grown up outside of the UK because maybe their parents were missionaries or maybe their parents were working overseas or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. they've grown up in other places or they've lived in other places. And I found so much connection with people because we almost all had a similar experiences of having lived and having moved around and having, you know, having to find our feet. And we just found that we had so much in common, even though we were so different, even though, you know, yeah. some people, they were in Malaysia or they were in India or they were in Australia or they were in Cyprus. We had a lot in common.
But you know, I think the bit that we have in common, like when we are with people who also lived elsewhere, because we've learned how to start from scratch.
Yes.
So even if someone did it with their parents growing up, so I did it by myself, but, you know, growing up, I was still in the same place. But I think even when it's on with family, especially when they're growing up, that's really hard because they have to start a new circle of friends every 3 years for some of them, you know, when they move around so much. Mm-hmm. But I think, so they've had to start from scratch, not with like getting a job, pay their bills, but like school, you know, they're new at school all the time and create new friendships. And they learn that things do not last forever, you know. So it does mm-hmm. a lot, I think, to a child growing up. I mean, it gives them it builds their character in many ways. But I think, yeah, I think it's that starting from scratch. And I feel sometimes, I think, I don't know if you've ever had this thought, but I've had this thought many times that if I was someone who felt content in just staying, I grew up in Belgium. So, you know, I guess like mm-hmm. I would have been very Belgian in terms of mentality growing up there, even if I'm not originally from there, but it doesn't matter. That was where I grew up. That was my culture.
Grew up, yeah.
Yeah. But had I been content to just stay there and live there, it would have made things so much simpler.
I definitely think it does make things simpler, for sure.
And I think people who don't have that need to, and I don't know if I really had that need to explore, because I kind of left for a couple of reasons, but I think I don't know if I look back, I'm like, okay, but how would I really feel? Would I maybe probably felt really restless and felt like I was missing out? But I think some people really have that in them that they don't need to go to literally the village next door. You know, like I've met people like that in yeah. Denmark where they've never literally been to the next village, which is not far. You can yeah, walk it.
In England, actually, I met people who hadn't been to London, you know, so.
So I think it makes it simpler. And I think it would have made things a lot easier. Would it have been made me happier? I don't know. But I guess if you're content, you're content.
You're content.
Part of me sometimes can be a little bit envious of that, going, you are around your family or, you know, or if they have family, like family, they have their friends they've always known and they're happy with it. And I don't think they understand sometimes what it takes and what it does to someone to have to... or to have chosen to start from scratch and your need for that special connection with people that you're not going to settle for chit chat with all your friends. You're going to have a bit deeper meaning.
But that's just it. I think a lot of it depends on, as you say, are you content there? Two things I will say to that. One is that I have found, this is just my experience and it's not a negative, people who have never gone anywhere, but a lot of the people who I've met who have had to start over for whatever reason, I find they have so much empathy, they have so much almost care and understanding for another person who may have to start over.
Yeah, because I think if you, any of us who had to start over has had to experience a little bit of a mini breakdown.
Oh yes,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah, because it's hard to, because I realized when I first left at 18 that actually how much of my own identity I had anchored it to my network of friends, to my education, to what I knew, who I knew, you know, being at home with my mom, where we live, everything like that was part of my identity. And that all of a sudden, that wasn't relevant anymore. No one gave a shit about, you know, I had to start from scratch because I'm no one.
So I would definitely say that. But I also think that, you know, when I first moved to England, I met this person and I remember she had lived in other places as well. She'd lived somewhere else before she moved to England. And I remember she'd always talk about, oh, when I was here, blah, blah, blah. And when I was there, and it was almost, you know, when you talked earlier about surrender.
Yeah.
It was almost as if she hadn't surrendered to the fact that she was living in that place anymore, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so for years, she would just compare everything in England to wherever she had been before. And then one day she moved back and all she talked about was England. And I was like, you know, it just made me think like sometimes a part of how much a sense of belonging you feel. And this is outside of, you know, mistreatment and all of those things. I'm not talking about anything like that. But I think sometimes that, you know, it does sound a bit, I don't want to say cheesy, but like you have to start with an inner feeling of surrender. Like I am in this place now. And that is something that I made a conscious decision to do. I always said, you know, like when I moved to England, I could sit around saying like, oh, I miss Barbados and I miss breadfruit and I miss mangoes and I miss this and I miss that. And I did. But also like I made a decision. I moved to England. Nobody forced me. Nobody pressured me to be there. I moved there. I made a choice and I've made a choice to accept the good things that they are about there and to, you know, just be okay with that. Because there are pros and cons to living everywhere. Right. And there are good things and bad things about living everywhere. And so to me, when I moved there, it's like, I have to take the good and the bad of this place right now, right here. Mm-hmm. When I moved back to Barbados, same thing. I have to take the good and the bad about this place right now, right here. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you don't start from that place, it's going to be very hard to eventually feel that sense of belonging because you're always be comparing it to something that is elsewhere.
Oh yeah, but and that's exactly like in relationships. If someone's always comparing that one that got away, that one never got away. You know, you didn't work out. But you cannot always compare. And I think, like you said, I think it sounds like it's not easy to take to own up to a decision and stability. And I think for me, it took me a while. Like I had a bit of difficulty of having to face what like it's happened in the last few years where I realized actually everything where I am, my life, how it's panned out is because of all the decisions I made. Mm-hmm. And that can sometimes be it's a strange pill to swallow. But it's like you have to face yourself, right? And I guess it's easier to go, oh yeah, well, you know, back in Belgium or back in Denmark, it's like this, because like that. I think there's a resistance to accept where you are because, like you said, no one forced us, you know?
Yeah. And we're lucky because no one forced us, right?
They're very lucky.
There are other people that are in other circumstances. But for me, when I think about the situations that I have been in, these were choices that I made. I left Barbados, I moved to England. I left England, I moved to Tanzania. I moved back to Barbados. These are decisions that I made. And I also was privileged enough to make the decision.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I will accept, you know, I'm not going to go into supermarket because, you know, here in Barbados, we import a lot of our food. Mm-hmm. Okay, and people go into, they complain, oh, this, you know, when I was in England, I could pay 50 pence for this and it costs $5. I'm not going to complain about that. Either I pay the $5 or I don't, but it doesn't make any sense because when I moved to England, I, you know, like a breadfruit that somebody would just give me a gift here. When I was in England, I knew somebody had to pay £8 for that fruit. So it's give and take. Things here that are cheaper and there are things here that are more expensive. And the same thing happens over there. And I just have to, the first thing I need to do in my mind is just accept. These are the choices that I made. This is where I am right now. These are that there are good things and bad things about being in this place. I have to celebrate the good things and make the most of it and just try to get on with the not so good things because no place is perfect.
And I think also, I think I say it goes both ways. It's like, I think, I don't know if you've noticed that, but like in every country that I've been to, they all think they're the best country in the world. I mean, they all do. I'm like, there's a good match, but no country is like, you know, everyone, I think, you know, I find like a lot of places people are so extremely patriotic for things they've never achieved or done, you know, but they have, they're so proud and it's great, but it's like, I feel sometimes like, I think that there has to be a bit of I think it's good to feel that you live in the best country in the world, but I think you have to have a bit of a reality check. Like not everyone is here because it's like, that's the only option, viable option. But like you said, like we are living, you know, it's a luxury to be able to pick up and go, you know, and having that freedom of movement.
And I don't take it for granted. And I try to make the most of how I feel about it as opposed to being annoyed with everything.
Yeah. Here. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely, I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world. I think what would probably change probably my attitude towards certain things, about my choice. And I think that's something that, I mean, I guess we all live and learn. But yeah, it's definitely been an amazing experience. And I think, I guess like how, I don't know how I would like round this up in terms of like home and belonging. But I think definitely like, with like, you know, that sense of surrendering and like you're saying, you know, looking for things that actually I guess almost like their own love language in the country you go to.
Yes, in the country you go to. Yeah. And also think to me, it's thinking about finding that place where you are free to be yourself, even if it is an online community.
Yes.
Right. Even if it's just an online community, because bringing back in the technology, like I think sometimes we are in a place where we need to find that space that we can go and just be ourselves and be free to express ourselves. And that may initially be an online space, but I feel like knowing that you have that space that you can be free to be yourself, it changes how everywhere else around you looks. And so that's the place to start. Find the place where you can feel at home in yourself, around people that allow you to be that person, and then kind of try to expand that experience from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, that's nicely put. I guess, like, in terms of, I know I've asked you these when you first came, when I first interviewed, I think it was early 2019, maybe.
Mm.
But I wonder maybe if anything's changed, if it's the same. So I always ask these two finishing thoughts to all my guests. And so the first one is, what would you tell your 18-year-old self?
What would I tell my 18-year-old self? That's another question I always find loaded, because that girl would not have listened to the 40-something-year-old version of me at all. Like, she talk about believing in everything being black and white. That was me when I was 18. So I always struggle with that question, because I'm like, oh, they're loaded. I could have told her, but would she have listened to any of them?
Yeah,
I doubt it.
I guess. What would you have liked to know? What would you wish you knew? Maybe that's why I should ask.
I think one thing I wish I had known when I was 18 was that nobody has it figured out. I think I thought at the time, you know, like I said about having my mom pass away, I think I felt like I'd missed out on.
Yeah.
The manual.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So everybody else knew how to talk to boys, and everybody else knew how to sit in public, and everybody else knew how to do this and knew how to do that. And I felt like I was missing all of these essential bits of knowledge that, you know, would make me a woman or an adult or a whatever. And I, you know, it was only when I was well into adulthood that I realized that everybody was making it up as they went along.
Yes.
And I wish that I had known that then.
Yeah, but you know what? This is really interesting, because obviously it's a different scenario. And obviously 9 is very young for you to lose your mother. And, you know, it makes sense that you'd ask yourself these questions. I feel it's interesting because I didn't grow up with my dad. And actually, part of the whole COVID thing, I actually found him. So I haven't actually talked about this on the pod yet. So this is the first time I mentioned this. But all the warning signs of what he's like. We're all there, you know, with the letters it's written to my mom and stuff like that, and what I could read from them and what I could read of his personality. And interesting enough, so, you know, we spoke and spoke a few times, and it's one of those things where at the same time, it hasn't changed anything in my life having spoken to him now, and at the same time, it kind of has. And the part that has, I think, is one that, you know, and obviously, again, it's different because, you know, it's not like if like your mom decided to leave and not do anything. It's very different. She passed. But I think what I learned with talking with him again is that this feeling I had all along anyway, but it kind of was proven right, is that I'm actually very lucky that he wasn't around. I think I'm probably very lucky. It would have messed me up quite a bit. But and two, I realized I dated of different versions of him my whole life, and I'm like,
even though he wasn't there, that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, and it made me appreciate. So I've got a frog in my I'm not getting emotional, I'm just having a frog in my throat. So let me just drink some tea. And three, it made me, although it's been a few years now, that I really appreciate a good man. Not that I knew how to handle it, but now I appreciate it even more because I haven't even seen him. He's based in Algeria, so I haven't seen him, especially with the lockdown. But I feel like, yeah, it's given me a whole new level of appreciation of a good man, because they're not all like that. They're not all like him. They're not all, you know, you know, act the way he does and things like that. So I think sometimes, even though, like I say, like it's obviously different. It's not, you know, your mom didn't walk out on you. But it may have felt that way when you were 9. I don't know. But I think, yeah, it's sometimes the alternative isn't there. There is no alternative. And like you said, now I know people who have like a 2-parent household that seem really loving, and the parents have, you know, been married for 50 years or not, and they can't figure it out either. They don't have their shit together. They don't know.
Exactly.
And you don't know how, you know, in the family, how it's all working out and how it is. But
you don't.
I think, yeah, we just don't know. And I think that is part of acceptance. I think that is what I wish I'd known, because I think had I really known what I found out, like recently with him, speaking with him, is that I wish I'd known this for sure. And I wish I'd known this, because I think, I mean, that, and again, I don't know, but I feel like I would have made healthier choices when it comes to men and my outlook on them and things like that. And I think, yeah, and I think he wasn't the only person that to define those beliefs I had with men. But I think it, I realized how almost like genetically he had an impact on me. It's very strange that, you know, he's a stranger, but he's not a stranger at the same time. I feel like I've met this kind of man so many times. I think, so yeah, it's interesting. So sometimes, yeah, it is just that it is what it is. And I used to hate that sentence. I used to hate that sentence.
I hated it. Like, don't tell me it's what it is. I will change everything. You know, like, I want it to be different. But also, you know what? Like, it is what it is. And, you know, it still could, not to say it still could have been worse, but like, I guess, like I said, I just wish I had known that there was nothing wrong with me.
Yes.
For not knowing how to navigate those situations, or for not feeling like I knew how to be a proper person or a proper adult or a proper woman. Like, there was nothing wrong with me. Nobody knows. There's no definition. Nobody knows. Everybody's making it up as they go along. And you just have to just keep going on and make the choices that you know best at the time.
Yeah, and if everybody knew, if we, you know, if you were the only one feeling this way, there wouldn't be all these like online programs and courses about, you know, female, like, you know, reignite your femininity, how to be in a relationship. Well, you say this is a huge industry because so many are having these questions, you know.
Of course, but of course, when I was 18, there was no
online. There was none of that.
You know, there was no online anything, and I wasn't somebody who'd ever grown up with, you know, self-help books or any of those things. To me, I felt like people just knew things.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how, like, especially the younger generation, how the internet has changed so much. Because for us growing up, we had to do the embarrassing and go to the library and like pretend to like renting four books, and then the fifth one was the one you really wanted, or just read it in the library. You don't want to have your name to it.
I know, it's like a
Google search away, you know, which is both good and bad at the same time. But it's the second finishing thought is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
I have to say, I don't put up with trying to be anybody else, right? Yeah. And so this is for me, like, I'm going to be me, right? And if you want me to be somebody else, then you need to, you know, that doesn't work for me anymore. I used to, you know, I'll listen to people's suggestions and recommendations or whatever, but like, I am just who I am now. And I don't know how you felt when you turned 40, but I feel like as I got closer to 40, I got less tolerant of people trying to make me into something that I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, that's why I find day jobs so hard. I mean, I'm not in a day job at the moment anymore, but because you have to, I feel like in a day job, I have to adapt myself so much and cut out so many of my edges to... Yes. You know, and I find that really hard because it makes you feel a bit muzzled or like someone has a strap jacket around you, and it's really uncomfortable because life is so short, and you know, there's no, and what you said, just being yourself, it's like the simplest, truest thing I find, you know, to do, but it's also the hardest thing as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think it's maybe accepting that. Well, sometimes being me, maybe I don't always know what me is. Sometimes I may surprise myself or disappoint myself. But I guess it's that too, right?
Yeah, we can all surprise ourselves, but also I reserve the right to make that decision.
True. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think, yeah, it's just so important to just be ourselves. Well, Sophia, like, this has been again, like an immense pleasure. You've got a very calming effect on me, which is great.
I'm glad.
So could you tell us like where people can find you? How can people work with you with the coaching? Give us all the stuff.
Completely. So you can find me. So my website is www.39andcounting.com, and that's the digits 39andcounting.com. So come find me there and you'll find my blog posts. You'll find how to work with me. You'll find my books are available if you want digital version, both the one that I mentioned earlier about lessons in love, but also there's another book that I wrote about being yourself that is on there as well. That's my, I call it my home online. Mm-hmm. Is 39andcounting.com, and so you can find me there. I'm on Instagram, Sophia Robinson 77. I'm on social media, and you know, if you come find Angie, and I'm not too I won't be too far away. I won't be too far away. She follows me, I follow her. So if you come find her, I won't be too far away.
I'll put all the links in the show notes as well, so people can click on it or copy and paste depending on which platform you listen from. But yeah, no, absolutely. And it was a great pleasure, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Absolutely, I can't wait. And I will definitely be looking forward to sharing this with my audience, because you know, like I said, it's kind of inspired me to get talking about this topic again. So I'm so glad I have this chance as well.
No, really, absolutely. Cool. No, thank you so much for this. Thank you, Sophia, for sharing your wisdom and insights and your good humor. So it's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com, or come and find me on Instagram. I have two accounts. One is at Tool for Dish It Podcast and at Health Expert Angie, link in the show notes. See you next week. And until then,
using health inappropriately.